There's a scripture lesson this morning I've chosen to read from 1 Corinthians, the 10th chapter. Begin reading at verse 1. 1 Corinthians 10:1. Moreover, brethren, I would not that ye should be ignorant how that all our fathers were under the cloud and all passed through the sea, and were all baptized unto Moses in the cloud and in the sea. Did all eat the same spiritual meat, and did all drink the same spiritual drink, for they drank of that spiritual rock that followed them, and that rock was Christ. But with many of them God was not well pleased, for they were overthrown in the wilderness. Now these things were our examples, to the intent we should not lust after evil things, as they also lusted. Neither be idolaters, as were some of them, as it is written, the people sat down to eat and drink, and rose up to play. Neither let us commit fornication, as some of them committed, and fell in one day 23,000. Neither let us tempt Christ, as some of them also tempted, and were destroyed of serpents. Neither murmur ye, as some of them also murmured, and were destroyed of the destroyer. Now all these things happen unto them for ensamples, and they are written for our admonition, upon whom the ends of the world are come. Wherefore, let him that thinketh he standeth take heed lest he fall. There hath no temptation taken you, but such as is common to man. But God is faithful, who will not suffer you to be tempted above that ye are able, but will with the temptation also make a way to escape, that ye may be able to bear it. Wherefore, my beloved brethren, flee from idolatry. I speak as to wise men, judge ye what I say. That's 1 Corinthians 10, 1 through 15. Israel's wilderness journey is given quite a prominent place in the scriptures. We read the one place there in Corinthians, where it's was quite full. And the reason it's important to us is that it's a type of the Christian journey. You had them in bondage in Egypt, which was a type of sin. You have them being baptized in the cloud and in the sea. You have them not entering directly into the promised land, but going through 40 years of wilderness journey, wandering, being tested, being trained, being instructed, and finally crossing Jordan into the promised land. And how many times we hear in especially so-called gospel songs about crossing Jordan, and that is a type of actually going into the promised land. And I have long time made reference to portions of this 106th Psalm, but today we're going to follow this outline from the Jewish commentary published by Sonsino in London. I did not get the references from them, but I did get the outline. So the 106th Psalm is the record of this. In fact, there is some thought that while the Psalms are written by different people, that it could be that the 105th Psalm was written by the same person who did the 106th Psalm, because it seemed to be all glory and how good they were, and the 106th Psalm is, you were bad. These are the different things you did that were wrong that I'm going to tell you about. And so anyway, it's a very interesting psalm, and we're going to find some interesting stories in it. It starts out, though, with an introductory praise and prayer. Praise ye the Lord, O give thanks unto the Lord, for he is good, for his mercy endureth forever. Who can utter the mighty acts of the Lord? Who can show forth all his praise? Blessed are they that keep judgment, and he that doeth righteousness at all times. Then that was sort of a general national prayer. Then in verses 4 and 5, the writer says, Remember me, O Lord, with the favor that thou bearest unto thy people, O visit me with thy salvation, that I may see the good of thy chosen, that I may rejoice in the gladness of thy nation, that I may glory with thine inheritance. But then immediately he goes into the different stories that are contained in the wilderness journey. And the first one that he talks about is the Red Sea passage, and this given in Exodus, the 14th chapter. And we all remember how that Moses was called of God to lead the children of Israel out of Egypt, and his job was to go to Pharaoh and say, "Let my people go." And Pharaoh said, "Well, I don't know." So God had sent a plague. In fact, there were 10 plagues, one by one, blood and flies and lice and darkness and all the different plagues that were given to them. And finally, the 10th was the slaying of the firstborn, in which the children of Israel, by being instructed to take the Passover lamb and slay it and put the blood on their doorpost and the lintels of their houses, and the so-called death angel would pass over them and spare their people. Well, that did it with Pharaoh. And there is every indication that Pharaoh lost his firstborn in the death of the firstborn in the Passover time. But the children of Israel, by being under the blood, were not affected by this. So anyway, they came out with great substance. In fact, the scriptures, the King James Version is bad in this. It says, go and borrow things from your neighbor, but the Hebrew there says, ask. In other words, that they were going into the desert to worship, and the Egyptians gave them jewelry and gold and gems and all to go into the wilderness. But anyway, they came into the wilderness and came to the Red Sea, and they came to the sea, and here was the sea before them. And Pharaoh had a change of heart and was pursuing them. So they looked back and saw the dust from the chariots rising up in the desert as they were coming toward them. And, of course, they cried. And they really doubted and lacked faith in God in seeing all this that was happening to them. And so Moses said, stand still. See the salvation of the Lord. Then finally, God said, go forward. And we all know how that God had caused a wind all that night, and it had pushed back the water so that they stood in a heap, it says, beside them. And here I bless old Cecil B. DeMille in the Ten Commandments. I can still see that. And it's very bad. A lot of translators, instead of saying Red Sea, say Reed Sea, which was just a kind of a swamp, and have them just going through the swamp. But the scriptures indicate that it was the Red Sea, and the water stood up beside them. So anyway, this was the Red Sea passage, and we also all remember that the Egyptians, when they saw the children of Israel going through the Red Sea on dry ground, they went in after them. And it says that the Lord troubled them. He took the wheels off their chariots and bogged them down. And finally he told Moses, take his rod, his shepherd's rod, and wave it over the sea. And it came in and drowned them all. And so, in fact, there's every indication that the children of Israel passed through the Red Sea at night. But we all remember how that God had this pillar of fire by night and pillar of smoke by day. In fact, he told about how that instead of having the pillar in front of them, he put the pillar in back of them so that it separated the children of Israel from the Egyptians. But anyway, the whole idea was that God got his glory and his renown by this. But the thing that was supposed to do also was to say to these murmuring, crying Israelis that God was for them and he was going to fight for them. And he did this wonderful thing in delivering them from the bondage in Egypt and through the Red Sea into the wilderness. But as we notice, then the very next thing we're considering here is the 106th Psalm, which is a record of the wilderness journey of the children of Israel. And these are verse by verse, verse 13 through 15. After that wonderful passage through the Red Sea, that wonderful deliverance, it was not many weeks until they complained about food. And so anyway, verses 13 through 15, they soon forgot his works. They waited not for his counsel, but lusted exceedingly in the wilderness and tempted God in the desert. And he gave them their request, but sent leanness into their soul. That verse has long been a favorite of mine. And I try to say when I'm praying for something, I said, if you give this to me, God, I hope that it's for my benefit and that I won't be the poorer for it spiritually. But that's what happened. He gave them food, so physically they were fat, but they were spiritually skinny. He sent leanness into their soul. But the thing is, after going through the Red Sea and seeing all that happened, they soon forgot his works. This is the story of Israel, up and down, up and down. God would lead them, help them, and then the next thing you know, they'd forget and just go on their way. But anyway, the 16th chapter of Exodus and the 10th chapter of Numbers both tell about the giving of the manna. And I'm not going to go into this because I know all of you in Bible school and other times have read about this. But I think it was very interesting that it was bread. In fact, it's hard for us to imagine what it was like. It said it was like a coriander seed, round and shiny. It was like a pearl. And they could grind it, bake it, boil it, fry it, eat it raw. And it was food for them. It was bread from heaven. In fact, the 8th of Deuteronomy, he said he wanted them to know that man does not live by bread alone, but by every word that proceeds from the mouth of God does man live. In other words, this was just a type of the heavenly bread and the type of Jesus Christ, who was kind of our manna. One of the things that I bring out in the 16th chapter of Exodus is that the giving of the manna really became a test of Israel's faithfulness to God and the keeping of the Sabbath. He said, you go out every day of the week, and when the dew goes up, there'll be the manna on the ground. On Friday morning when you go out, take twice as much, because you're not to go out on the Sabbath. And someone went out and gathered anyway, and it said it got full of worms and was rotten. But God was really testing them, and this is when he was giving them the Sabbath. The Sabbath was really a test of their faithfulness and their obedience by them doing what he said about gathering every day, but not on the Sabbath. And but it was lusting on their part. And God supplied it, and he gave them their food, but they were spiritually poor for it. But as I may have mentioned it, when I have seen aerial views of the wilderness of Sinai that the children of Israel spent 40 years in, I wonder how anybody could live there. Because it's horrible. I've seen deserts that went on for miles, but this was just rugged, barren, awful desert. And so they had to have food and they had to have water from God, and God was faithful. And when you think about the logistics of it, if you had an army of 2.6 million men, think of the food it would take. Well, there were about 2.6 million Israelis in the wilderness being fed and giving water daily through 40 years. It says their shoes never wore out and their clothes did not either. But anyway, the thing about this, as he says, they soon forget his works. God gave them a request, but he sent leanness into their souls. The very next one is a revolt against Moses and Aaron, the 16th verse, 8 through the 18th of Psalm 106. They envied Moses also in the camp, and Aaron, the saint of the Lord. The earth opened up and swallowed up Dathan and covered the company of Abiram, and a fire was kindled in their company. The flame burnt up the wicked. It's inevitable that in leadership there are some people that think they can do it better. And so they came to Moses and Aaron in the tent and said, "You take too much on you. You think you're the only holy leaders in the camp, but all of us are holy." And so it really bothered Moses, and he appeared before the Lord, and anyway he just said, I'll show you who's holy. And so as a result, the correct priests of the Lord put fire in their censers, and Korah and his company, Dathan and Abiram, put fire in their censers, and they appeared before the Lord, and the earth. Moses said, if these people die a natural death, God's not God. Well, they didn't die a natural death. The earth opened up and swallowed them. And so it showed that God judged them. In fact, I'm not going to bring out Jude very much in this lesson, but when you go into the book of Jude, it's doing the very same thing that the psalmist was doing here in listing all of these things that happened to the children of Israel and to give them as lessons. Because you get over in Jude, and it talks about Korah too. It talks about Balaam and Korah and so forth. All of these very same things, but they're lessons. And he's taking well-known examples all the way through and saying, here's your lesson. And so as a result, Dathan and Abiram were called wicked men, and they died before the Lord with the earth swallowing them up. And one of the things it talked about there, it used the word pit. It's the word Sheol, meaning grave. The next event, as is given in the psalm, is the sin of the golden calf, verses 19 through 23. And here it's after they go out of one sin, you might say, into another. And here in 19 through 23, they made a calf in Horeb and worshipped the molten image. Thus they changed their glory into the similitude of an ox that eateth grass. They forgot God, their Savior, which had done great things in Egypt. Wondrous works in the land of Ham, and terrible things by the Red Sea. Therefore he said that he would destroy them, but not Moses. Had not Moses his chosen stood before him in the breach, to turn away his wrath, lest he should destroy them. But anyway, the story, as you remember this, it's given in the 32nd of Exodus. And Moses went up on the mountain to receive the tables of stone, the Ten Commandments, and he didn't come down. It was 40 days, and he just didn't come down. People said, we need something visible. I can't stand to just think that God's up on that mountain and Moses up on that mountain. We've got to have something visible. And people are bad through the years, through the centuries and the world, to got to have something they can see. And that's why idols have been important. That's why in certain church we know of that they have all these images, because got to see something, got to have something visible. Well, anyway, so they came to Aaron and said he wanted them to make him a golden calf. And they all brought their jewelry, and he cast it. And they said that they sat down to eat and drink and rose up to dance. And Moses came down, and he said, what are you doing? They said, oh. Aaron said, well, I threw this gold in the fire, and this calf came out. Oh, yeah. Yeah, it came out. I threw this gold in that, and the calf came out. What did he do? He ground the thing up and put it in water and made him drink it. I thought that was a pretty good thing. But anyway, sin, again, God had to straighten him out. And when you get over in, one of the things I think is wonderful, you get over in Deuteronomy, which is called the second law, Moses is about ready to go up on the mountain and die, and the children of Israel about to go into the promised land. And so he is kind of rehearsing some of these things. And so in the ninth of the book of Deuteronomy, the 8th through the 21st verse, he tells all about this and reminded them of the golden calf. Had to have something they could see. I'm going to kind of go on with these. You can kind of make the applications, but the very next one, you have the incident of the spies. This is 24 through 27 of Psalm 106. Yea, they despised the pleasant land. They believed not his word, but murmured in their tents, and hearkened not unto the voice of the Lord. Therefore he lifted up his hand against them to overthrow them in the wilderness, and to overthrow their seed also among the nations, and to scatter them in the lands. This is a very important kind of a small incident in a way, but it was very important. And I gave the text here, Numbers 13 and 14, and up through the second verse of the 15th chapter. And what do you have here? You have them coming through the wilderness, and they said, well, Moses said, I'm going to send spies to spy out the land and see what it's like. God's given it to us. Let's go over and see what it looks like. And so when you read on down through here in the 13th, he chose 12 men, one from each of the tribes, and to head up to be these spies to go into this promised land. And the second verse, it says in the last phrase, every one of them a ruler among them. And the third verse, all those men were heads of the children of Israel. When you go down, the sixth verse of the tribe of Judah was Caleb. Eighth verse of the tribe of Ephraim, it was Oshea. That's Joshua. The Jews and the Greeks, neither one have a J in their alphabet. So Joshua is really Oshea, the son of Nun. And the 16th verse, these are the names of the men which Moses sent to spy out the land. And so they went into the land. And they returned, and they got two reports. The good guys said, the land flows with milk and honey, and this is the fruit of it. All of us remember the story about how that they had a one bunch of grapes that it took two men to carry on a pole. That's how wonderful it was. I remember one time my mother's first cousin, J. Edgar Adamson, had Tokay grapes, and we went over and picked a bunch that filled, one bunch filled a wash pan. I don't know how much it weighed. It weighed somewhere between 10 and 20 pounds, just one bunch. But this took two men to carry one bunch. But anyway, the others came back and said, yeah, the land is pretty, but there are the Amalekites there, and there are these giants, and the children of Anak are there, and it just consumes the people that go in there. And they brought back this evil report. And the congregation, when they heard this report, they just lifted up their voices and wept and said, why did you do this? Why did you bring us out here? And so forth. And so they just didn't trust the Lord. In fact, Moses in the 14th, he said, you rebel, you're not rebelling against us, you're rebelling against the Lord. And Joshua and Caleb said, the Lord is with us, don't fear these people. And so they kept trying to talk them into going. But the 12th verse of the 14th chapter, I will smite them with pestilence and disinherit them. And go down in the 21st verse. As truly as I live, all the earth shall be filled with the glory of the Lord. And goes on and talks about this back and forth, good and bad, with the 10 bringing back the evil report and the 2 good bringing back the good report. What did God do on account of this? You're not going to enter the promised land. It's just It's a short journey from Egypt to the land of promise. But he said, you're going into the desert 40 years, 1 year for every day that they searched out the land. And everybody from 20 years old and upward is going to die before you go into the promised land. So here, if you read in the book of Numbers, there were 603,550 men 20 years old and upward in Israel at this time. So of all that number, 603,548 died in the wilderness and did not enter the promised land. Only Caleb and Joshua were the two that entered into the promised land. The 31st verse, they shall know the land which ye have despised. And here again is this land of promise. And the 36th verse of the 14th chapter, the man which Moses sent to search the land to return and made all the congregation to murmur against him by bringing up slander upon the land, even those men that did bring up the evil report, died by the plague before the Lord. In fact, this is figurative. I want you to know it's figurative. The Hebrew Scriptures talk about a lower hell. And all of us say, well, that guy deserved a lower hell than that other person because he was lots worse than they were. Well, it's figurative, but God said they deserved a lower hell. And so when you get over in the New Testament, in 2 Peter, they're confined in Tartarus, which was the lower hell, unto the day of judgment, because they brought back this evil report. And over again, it's back and forth. The land God promised, you despised. And it's over and over. 40th verse, they rose up early in the morning, got them to the top of the mountain. Lo, we be here, and we will go unto the place which the Lord hath promised, for we have sinned. And the 43rd verse, because ye turned away from the Lord, therefore the Lord will not be with you. And finally, in the 15th chapter, the 2nd verse, speak unto the children of Israel, and say unto them, when ye become into the land of your habitations, which I give unto you. He goes on and talks about this offering. But I want you to notice the terminology there, the land of your habitations. Hold that, go over to Jude, the 6th verse. That's the last book next Revelation. And you're going to read a verse that sounds just about like that. So, to me, I don't know how much plainer it can be. The terminology, habitations, and the land that God promised, and the lack of faith in going into the land, and God being angry with them, and especially with the 10 leaders of the tribes who should have known better, should have trusted God, should have led the people who were destroyed until the day of judgment. That's what the lesson is. But it was bad. And of course, the children of Israel, as a result of this, had to wander for 40 years before they were ever allowed to enter into the promised land. 28 through 31, the sin at Peor was a story of them worshiping Baal and Ashtaroth, the Canaanite fertility gods, burning their children in the fire in the valley of Hinnom. This was a terrible thing. In fact, Harry Whitaker, in his book, said that they were sacrificing to the dead because they believed in immortality of the soul. But all of the worship to Baal and Ashtaroth was wicked. They were fertility gods. And so there were temple prostitutes, male and female, that connected with this worship. It was bad. One by one, God put up with them as mercy. He overlooked these things and went on to let them go to another time. And the next thing was the waters of strife. I know you've all heard about Meribah when they cried for water. And God said to Moses, I've given you two texts. Exodus 17, 1-7 was where he was to strike the rock and water came forth. In the story in Numbers 20, he was told to speak to the rock. But they made Moses so mad that he took his rod and struck the rock instead of speaking to it. But water came out, but God said, Moses, sorry, but you can't enter the promised land. So that's what that caused the prohibition of Moses entering the promised land because of their murmuring. God just put up with this time after time, their disobedience, even in entering Canaan. They were supposed to kill the people of these foreign tribes that were in Canaan, but they didn't. According to the scripture, it says they sacrificed to devils. And this is the word Shedim. It had reference to the winged bulls that were part of the images of the Canaanites. These are all recounted right here in the 106th Psalm. The 34th to 39th verse was on that. He did not destroy the nations as they were commanded to, but they mingled among the heathen, and they sacrificed their sons and their daughters unto devils. This is what we're talking about here. This is not devils as people think of devils, but it had to do with images. In fact, it's used that way many times in the Psalms and other places in the Old Testament. So they were defiled with their own works. In fact, if you ever want an interesting study, take the word abomination and go through it in Young's or Strong's. You're going to find out it had to do with works of men's hands, making images and worshiping the works of their hands. As a result of them not obeying when they entered Canaan, they were punished. And if you want to read the story of their up and down in their punishment, the book of Judges says they did evil. They were captive by the different tribes. Then they sent a judge and they were delivered. And then they did bad and they were captured again and over and over and over again. But that's in the 40th to the 43rd verses. The wrath of the Lord was kindled against his people. He gave them to the hand of the heathen, and they that hated them ruled over them. Many times did he deliver them, but they provoked him with their counsel and were brought low for their iniquity. The 40 verses 44 to 46, make a note here. I did not have my notes with me in Edgefield, so I just wrote down how it started, nevertheless. But the title there is God Remembered His Covenant. Verses 44 to 46, God Remembered His Covenant. And so when you read 44, nevertheless, he regarded their affliction, he heard their cry, and he remembered for them his covenant, and repented according to the multitude of his mercies. He made them also to be pitied of all those that carried them captives. So these are all of these steps in this story of the wilderness journey in the 106th Psalm. And as a concluding prayer, verse 47, save us, O Lord our God, and gather us from among the heathen, to give thanks unto thy holy name, and to triumph in thy praise. The whole psalm is leading up to that. Yes, God, we have sinned. Yes, God, we deserve punishment. But please save us for your sake and for your mercy's sake, so that you can go on and fulfill the purpose that you have in Israel to make them the holy nation, to lead people to you. And then it closes out with verse 48, a closing doxology, and this is the end of the fourth book of Psalms, each one of them ending with a doxology. Blessed be the Lord God of Israel from everlasting to everlasting. Let all the people say, Amen. Praise ye the Lord. That is the conclusion of this long recounting of all the things that happened to Israel in the wilderness. But as 1 Corinthians, the 10th chapter, told us, all these things happened to them for our example. We weren't there. I'd probably wouldn't say, if I'd have been there, I wouldn't have murmured. If I'd have been there, I wouldn't have lusted in the wilderness. I wouldn't have complained about water. I wouldn't have complained about the food. Oh, yeah? Probably all would, just the same. But it was written for our profit. As Romans 15:4 says, these things that happened aforetime are written for our learning. If we think we stand, he said right here in this very text that we read, these things happened to them for types. They are written for our admonition, upon whom the ends of the age are come. Wherefore, let him that thinketh he standeth take heed, lest he fall. Yeah, take heed. If we think we wouldn't have done it, we better take heed. These sins of theirs were present-day sins. And we're on this wilderness journey, and we need to recognize the leadership of Christ, the leadership of His Word. We need to remember how He has blessed us so many times in the past. Whenever I worry, I say, I shouldn't worry. Look how He helped me before. And we need to remember that. And we think of the things that we've done wrong and how God was merciful to us and has forgiven us. It's a journey, all right, and it's a learning experience. It's a lesson. It's a lesson in living. It's been done before. It's not new to us. And all we can say is, may God help us to give us mercy and guidance in our wilderness journey.